Good, so once again, good afternoon, brothers and sisters.
Happy chilly, chilly day to everybody. Here in the Gospel, we hear the story of Jesus getting into Simon Peter's fishing boat. Two reasons why he does that. The first is that it's a really effective way to speak to the crowds. You'll notice this happens all across the Gospels. Jesus gets into a boat, he pulls back a little bit from the shore, and he begins to teach. You ever been out on the water and you realize how well your voice carries across the water? You see, well, that's what Jesus was operating on. And the people, they'd all line up on the shore. And it worked like an amphitheater with magnificent acoustics. That's the first reason why Jesus gets into St. Peter's boat. But the second reason why Jesus gets into Simon Peter's boat is because Jesus knows that he's going to call Simon Peter. He's going to call him to be an apostle. He's going to call him to be one of his closest followers. He's going to call him to be head of the church. But before Jesus calls Simon Peter, he first tests his faith. And this is how he does it. He says to Peter, "Put out into the deep water and lower your nets for a catch." A commandment which makes zero sense to Simon Peter. Four reasons for that. First reason, the best fishing on the Sea of Galilee was during the night. If you've been up all night and you haven't caught anything, it's time to go home. That's what Simon Peter's doing right here in the Gospel when suddenly Jesus says, "Hey, why don't you go back out and try again?" Makes no sense whatsoever. Second reason why this made no sense. You know, Jesus says, "Put out into the deep." But the best fishing on the Sea of Galilee wasn't in the deep. It was in the shallows. That's why whenever you hear the Gospel proclaimed and the apostles are fishing, they're always real close to the shore. It made no sense at all. Third reason, they just finished cleaning their fishing nets. Now, you can probably imagine this. Cleaning your fishing net was a nasty job. It was time-consuming, it was smelly, it was dirty. You had to get the seaweed off of there and the algae off of there. And once you're done cleaning your nets, last thing you want to do is throw them in the water again, right? So that made no sense. Fourth reason why it made no sense for Jesus to say this to Peter is because Peter was a professional fisherman. And not only was he a professional fisherman, Peter owned a fishing business. He had multiple boats. He had multiple employees, which is a short way of saying the man knew how to catch a fish, right? What's Jesus? He's a carpenter. He's a rabbi. Peter hears Jesus tell him to put out into the depths, and Peter thinks to himself, "You know, rabbi, I don't tell you how to preach. Please don't tell me how to catch a fish," right? Crazy as it sounds, though, all these things that Jesus told Peter to do, somewhere in Peter's soul, in the depths of his heart, he knew there was one thing that was even crazier still. And that would be to ignore what Jesus said. Because this isn't the first time Jesus ever met Peter. Same gospel, just one chapter earlier, Jesus went over to Peter's house and he cured his mother-in-law. Gospel tells us his mother-in-law is deadly sick with a fever. Jesus walks over, just touches the lady. And instantly, she's better. Peter knows God is with this Jesus. So what does Peter do? He sets his ego aside and he does what he's told. And you know how the story ends, right? Such a miraculous catch of fish, he's never seen the likes of it in his entire life. I've been on a couple of fishing trips in my life, right? I've never been on any fishing trip like this, where you catch so many fish that you almost make the boat sink. Peter knows this Jesus has power over the forces of nature. This is a miracle. Fish don't act like this, which is why Peter says to Jesus, "Lord, just please go away. I am so not worthy to be in your presence." Now, lots of lessons here in this gospel. Let me give you just two. Just two today, okay? Here's the first. Please remember this as you try to be a follower of Christ. God always acts first, and we always reply. It doesn't seem like that, right? It seems like you're the one chasing after God, but all the spiritual masters tell us the reverse is the case. See, Jesus just gets into Peter's boat. He doesn't ask permission. He just gets into his boat and starts telling Peter what to do. That's the way God acts. He takes initiative. We're out there, we're living our lives, we're thinking to ourselves, I'm out there searching for God. Not anything like near as much as God is searching for you. God is not out there dumbly sitting like a mountain waiting for you to climb up. He's on the prowl. And believe it or not, we are the ones running away from him time and time again. I could give a separate homily on that, but just file that one away. Real important idea for living the spiritual life. Grace comes first. God always acts first, and we're the ones who respond. Here's a second lesson. Second lesson is that the words that Jesus says to Peter here, he says to all of us, put out into the deep. You spent enough time living your life in the shallows. Put out into the deep water. You know what it means for you and me to put out into the deep water? It means to write God a blank check. It means to trust God unreservedly. It means to say, thy will be done, and actually mean it. Whenever you do that, what happened to Peter in this gospel happens in your life. There is always an abundant catch. Now, you aren't always going to see it, right? Sometimes you will see it. A lot of times you won't. But keep this in mind. Whenever you say yes to God and it's sacrificial and it's total and it's from the depths of your heart, there is always an abundant catch, an incredible consequence of good. Now, you look at the lives of the saints and you learn two things. You'll learn, first of all, sometimes they see the good that they do, and you'll learn that a lot of times they do not see the good that they do. A couple of stories to help illustrate that. Here's one I think I've told you before. It's about one of our newer saints. Archbishop of Saigon, Cardinal Nguyen Van Thuan. Now, he's not a saint yet, but he's on the way, okay? He was Archbishop of Saigon in 1975. And if you know your history, you know that 1975, that's the year Saigon fell to the North Vietnamese. Now, the good archbishop, he was taken prisoner by the communists, thrown into Vietnamese prison camp. And his first thought was just to despair. He thought to himself, you know, God, why have you abandoned me? And what good can possibly come from this? Do you know what he did next? He put out into the deep, so to speak. He dug down deep and he said, you know what? God's completely sovereign. Nothing ever happens by chance. And if God has willed that I end up being in Vietnamese prison camp, then I'm going to glorify God from prison. And you know what happened to him? He spent 13 years in communist prison camps, and they bounced him around from prison to prison to prison, and they never explained what they were doing until suddenly, after 13 years of being a prisoner, they freed him from prison and they banished him from the country. And when they did, he finally figured out what had been going on. Every time they sent him to jail, he invigorated the faith of all the other prisoners, because the people would start saying one to another, the archbishop, he's in prison with us, he's in prison with us, and their faith would grow. Now, if you're a good communist, you don't like it when people's faith grows. So what did they do? They send you to another prison. Where the same thing happened again and again and again. And they finally realized every time we send this guy to prison, the only thing that happens is everyone grows in their faith. So we can't keep sending him to prison. And if we kill him, we'll just make a hero out of him. So they banished him from the country. But he didn't even know. And for 13 years, he evangelized his entire country. That's what you call an abundant harvest. He was fortunate. He got to say it. Now, take warning. A lot of times, you are not going to see the harvest that God draws from your goodwill. In fact, sometimes God's going to do his best work after you've already died. Great example of that is our own patroness, St. Therese. If you know anything about her life, you know that Therese died at the tender age of 24. There's some of you out there thinking that that's really old, but let me assure you, that's really young, right? 24 years old, Therese, and the only people who knew about Therese were the sisters who were in her little convent in France, just a couple of dozen little religious sisters. couple of generations later, the entire world is aflame with the beautiful spirituality of Saint Teresa of Lisieux, which I hope you already know. It's known as the Little Way. This was Therese's great contribution to the church. She taught us that you can love God not necessarily by doing magnificent and great and noteworthy things, but most especially by doing very small things with very great love. Set the world on fire. When she was alive, Therese said, "I wish I could evangelize the whole world. I wish I could go out to the far distant lands like Francis Xavier and proclaim the gospel." Poor lady died at the age of 24. But guess what happened after she died? Did you know that since 1994, the relics of Saint Teresa of the Child Jesus have been touring the world? They've been to 70 countries, and hundreds of millions of people have gone out to see her. 2001, Bones of Saint Therese made a tour through Ireland. 70% of the country went out to see Saint Therese. Evangelizing the world, even from the other side of death, that's what I call an abundant harvest. Now, what did all these saints have in common? Two things. Number one, they let Jesus into their boat. Number two, they weren't afraid to put out into the deep. That's our Lord's message to you. Don't live your life in the shallows. Most people live their whole life in the shallows. You know that? Most people, St. Thomas Aquinas tells us, they give their lives to one of four things. They give their hearts to honor, power, money, and pleasure. Very, very tempting. We give our hearts to power and to money. Why? Because it makes us feel like we're in control of our lives. We give our hearts to pleasure and to honor because it makes it easy and it makes it nice. That's what you call living your life in the shallows. It's tempting to live your life in shallow water. It sure is easy. But God didn't make you for an easy life. Like Pope Benedict said, God didn't make you for comfort. God made you for greatness. Don't be afraid to put out into the deep, to say to God, "Thy will be done," and to really mean it. When you come to the end of your life, you're going to realize the most important work you ever did was leading other people to God. You know what the greatest accolade that anyone can ever say of us at a eulogy or at a funeral? It's this: because of you, I know who God is. Now that's high praise. Greatest work we will ever do is to bring other people to God. And the second thing we're going to realize is that we brought people to God in spite of our weaknesses. Very often, God brought souls to himself because of your weaknesses. So don't think to yourself that you're inadequate or that you first have to be perfect before God can use you. You think you're inadequate to do God's good work? Join the club. Biggest club in the world. St. Peter, "Depart from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man." St. Paul, "I'm the worst sinner in the world, I don't even deserve to be called an apostle." Prophet Isaiah, first reading, "I'm a man of unclean lips, living among a people of unclean lips." True confession story here this morning. True confessions. Every time I stand at this pulpit and preach something to you, I feel so grossly inadequate. There's a voice somewhere deep down in my soul saying, "Who are you? Who are you to speak in God's name to all these people?" When I was a little boy, I used to really look up to priests. I remember when I was a little boy flying a kite once, I had this thought: I wonder what priests are like when they're little kids. Then I became a priest. Remember, the day I was ordained, my brother, the one who just died, he hadn't been ordained a priest yet. He comes up to me on the day I'm ordained a priest, and he says, "Yeah, I used to have such admiration for priests, but now I figure anybody can do it." Don't worry about being inadequate. Don't be afraid to let the Lord into your boat and to put out into the deep. Every time you say yes to him, He does amazing things through you. And that's why I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Amen.